Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Voices That Cook. I am your host, William Nunn, who is an actor who also likes to cook and do voices and all that good stuff. And I've got someone else here who also likes to do voices and cook and all that good stuff, and that is my friend, Jacob Wilson. Jacob, how are you, good sir?
Hello, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me on.
I am so glad to not only have you on, but this is going to sound very interesting, especially in the world of the current situation we're in right now with a pandemic and everything. This is my first podcast recording session where I get to actually have someone in the same room.
Hello.
So we are literally in my friend Kelsey Mayer's recording space on a bed just chatting. So it is a comfy spot. We've got good insulation. There's probably not a whole lot of reverb, so hopefully we should sound fine in comparison to how probably the other episodes sound. But yeah, it's a nice change of pace, and it's going to save me a whole lot of time on editing.
I feel that. I've never edited a podcast, but I'm sure it's a bitch. Oh, how's swearing?
Swearing's fucking good.
Hell yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yes. We are all allowed to swear here. And just to let y'all know, this is the fifth episode and it's already going strong. I've really enjoyed doing this new show and I really hope y'all have enjoyed listening to it so far. And I'm sure all of you who... I'm sure there's some of you listening that are familiar with Jacob, but if you're not, he is a very talented actor and a very good casting director as well. And also, you've shared some good food picks that made me go, you know what? I want to see if he wants to be on the show. And that's how we became friends.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
It is fun. Mm-hmm. And I figured I would start out with asking you, what got you into acting in the first place?
Well, I started acting when I was in a middle school. I actually had ambitions to be in Disney stuff. I actually felt jealous that I wasn't in Suite Life on Deck because I wanted to date Debbie Ryan. But yeah, that was not going to be in the cards for me. But I did do acting in middle school. I did theater. And then in high school, they didn't have theater at the high school I went to, which I was kind of bummed about. But they had a film program, which, I mean, I love film too. But around that time, I got into anime and I've told the story many times. Mm-hmm. But I watched some shows that were on Netflix, and they were all from the company Funimation. And when I looked that up, I was like, oh, crap, I've driven by that place, like, God knows how many times. Because they're in my town. And that's when I thought, you know, voice acting, that's something I could do from where I'm at. And from there, I just started taking classes. I auditioned. I eventually found the online world. And that's how I ended up in this spot.
Mm-hmm.
Casting and directing actually are something that kind of like just happened.
Yeah.
It was on the project Divine Speaker, and I was already friends with the production team. They asked me if I could give them if I can give my opinions on some auditions. And I listened to them and I helped them make their final picks, and they just asked, like, hey, could you like keep doing this? And I was like, yeah. And then I got brought into this dev server because of it, where I was offered another casting position, and then another, and then another, and then it just kept on going like that. One of these eventually I directed on, which is Lucent 9, and that's how I ended up doing the being the triple threat, as it were.
There you go. What would you say was probably the most difficult casting decision you ever had to make as a casting director?
There's this one role for Witches and Warlocks, which is actually my biggest casting call to this point. And I had to cast two characters that were non-binary. And that was interesting because non-binary doesn't have a sound.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really know what to look out for, what I could really cut down on when I was looking for roles. I eventually just really had to look at the character's appearance, and out of everybody who auditioned, because, you know, so many different voice types I got for that, just seeing which ones in my head clicked the most.
Mm-hmm.
But I ultimately think I made great casting choices from those. And I think, yeah, you can get in your head about that, about casting roles that don't have a specified sound like that, but you know what works with images and what doesn't clash. It's just something that you develop over time doing this. Yeah.
I can see that being an interesting factor, and as someone who has made projects of my own, I already kind of have in mind who I'd love to have play a lot of characters that I put together, and just thinking about the workload of doing a public casting call and figuring out who's who, like who would be good enough for it. And then also just hearing some people who may not understand the entirety of the rules of how it works, which is like, that's something other people need to understand, that with an audition, you just read the directions, read what's on there, and you'll know what to do. And as you've told me at lunch, that there were some people that just clearly did not do that.
That's why I've had to be more specific with my directions, but I still get people who either they don't ignore them or it's just a habit that they can't really break. But that's why, like, we keep talking about it and why this conversation never really ends, because there's always going to be new people coming in who need to learn these rules, and even people who need to relearn these things, or people who've never heard them before. There's always going to be somebody that needs to hear. You don't have to slate for a lot of auditions. Usually that's more of a studio thing, but for indie stuff, it's not really necessary. Why it's important that you record in an isolated location, and you need to be mindful of your sound quality, because it's not like we're recording for a studio where it doesn't really matter if you have the best setup for that. But if you're doing something for an online project, it has to be the quality you will put into the project. So you have to be mindful of your mic quality, your sound quality, the space you're around. Generally, the space is the most important, but those are the things to keep in mind. And they will always bear repeating as long as new people come into the scene.
What would you say are probably some of your main recommendations for anyone that wants to audition but have a better chance at nailing the character?
I always encourage people to go for it. If they feel that they can fit within the parameters of it, I used to be like, oh, anyone go for it. But then I heard some others' opinions and I realized that, yeah, if it's something that's like way out of the range of the character, that just obviously isn't going to mix. It may not be your character to audition for, but there will always be others down the line. But if you feel like you have a good chance, I say go for it, because something I find myself is we don't know what we're looking for until we hear it. We can hear so many different takes and already have an idea in our mind what is going to be the perfect role for it, the perfect person for it. But then we hear another one that's like not at all like that, but it's working. And we like it. It's different. It's interesting. It's unique. So it's why I always encourage people, if you feel you have a good chance at it, go for it.
Do you also, and this is actually a question I wouldn't mind asking you just from a personal auditioning point of view, because I've seen it from different points of view. Do you usually prefer people to send in their auditions raw, or do you think it's better to touch them up?
The closer to raw, the better. Don't do any like crazy editing. I've heard some people say noise reduction and normalization, like do something like that. And I think that if you're going to do that, that's the most you should do. I've seen people who do things like add in reverb, or they just do a lot of heavy mixing to it. And I mean, that's great, doing the heavy mixing. The reverb stuff isn't great. Please don't do that.
No.
But the heavy mixing stuff, it's not the audio you're going to be sending people. They want to know your raw stuff so that they can do what they're going to do to it. Unless the project asks you to mix your own stuff, which I hope never happens, because telling a bunch of people to just individually mix their own audio, you better be paying them a lot.
There was a project that I got to audition for, and it's not out yet, so I don't think I can say what it is off the top of my tongue.
Respect NDAs.
Yes, but I will say it was one of those things where it's like I tried out the voice that they wanted me to use, and I think it might have been the only line of dialogue for that particular character, and they went ahead and did the whole sound mixing for that character, and it sounded remarkable. It sounded incredibly cool. And it's like, okay, I've made content with weird sounding creatures and all that sort of stuff, and I couldn't even do that.
Yeah.
How they made that sound. So props to those people that did that. And hopefully within the next few years or so, that can be heard. That little bit of dialogue can be heard for y'all to hear in the public world environment, whatever, because it was fun. And, to go from doing that to hearing that, it's like that's what the sound engineer is meant to do. The actor just do the lines, perform them in a way that sounds like how it would be, and send it out.
Shout out to audio mixers. Y'all are fantastic, and thank you for making us sound good.
Yes, yes, yes. And I always find also with the stuff I've done, I think it is very important to keep immersion a very important thing with projects, especially to make sure that there's – like if there's any fan noise, get rid of it or turn it down or hide it or something. And even on top of that, like I'm so glad that I have RX elements so I can get rid of all the mouth clicks that pop up.
I've had mouth clicks and stuff. That all depends. But I've heard projects where the audio quality is just inconsistent.
Yeah.
And it's clear some people aren't recording with the best of setups, and it just really can take you out of it. You're reminded, like, oh yeah, these are people in a booth. These aren't characters talking.
Oh,
which,
yeah.
Well, not characters in a booth, because that is not booth quality right there.
No.
But that's why it is important to have consistency and that your audio quality is up to snuff. And it's not like it's an expensive thing. My setup cost me, like, $300 to $400, which I know sounds a lot, but considering that you could buy a Studio Bricks for like $20,000 and a Neumann for I've heard some Neumanns like $4,000 if you have like an U87 or something. I hope that's not what you have at this stage.
No.
But those are all factors to keep in mind, and you can come out with a pretty good setup. I mean, my stuff is just my closet with a bunch of blankets and comforters just I randomly found around the house. So you can improvise with whatever's around you and make your stuff sound better.
I normally have been recording for the last month and a half or so in a little attic, and there's these little shelves, and my mom and I put a bunch of pillows and quilts on there. And I've even got a towel on the ground. Not really a towel, but a very thin quilt on the ground for my feet to stand on. And the front portion of my tripod. So that way, if I make any steps at all, it's going to be very quiet. And hopefully my mic won't pick that up. And I can actually yell and do this! And it will basically, you know, there won't be any reverb sound. There won't be a room echo, which I unfortunately started to notice. Those itty-bitty room echoes used to record. I was like, okay, I need to go somewhere new. And this is possibly one of the reasons why I've not been getting cast.
Unairing some stuff right now.
Yes. There's always those things where you think to yourself, why am I not getting cast? And
it's not a personal decision.
It's not a personal decision.
Do you know how many people usually audition for one role in a project?
A lot.
At least 100. Yeah. I mean, back to Witches and Warlocks, I got over 2,000 auditions for 7 characters. So that's about 300 auditions each. And I had to find one person from all of those. Even like the casting calls I've had less people for, it's at least like 40 to 50 to still pick from. So I can't give everyone the parts, unfortunately. But it's nothing personal. You just gotta keep in mind, like, there's a lot of people. All you gotta do is keep doing your best and keep trying new things. Because eventually, you're going to hone your craft to the point that you're going to get it. You're going to get it just right.
And I'm even at that point now where I'm starting to understand how distinctive choices are very important and how you can use those to make, like, if you're required to send out multiple takes, that's where that will really be a benefit to you. But also making the lines almost your own at times.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if it feels like the better approach where it's – I remember auditioning for a character and there was absolutely no swear words for it, but I added one in there and I was like, that actually felt really good. I'm going to send that one out. And I don't care if I don't get it or not. That was good. Like, that was
William,
very good.
We appreciate your enthusiasm, but this is for a children's pop-up book.
No. Of course, if it were a children's book, no, I wouldn't do that. There's always obviously context needed where it'd be like, yeah, it's fine to swear. It might be okay to just say that for the sake of the audition, but you also obviously would not want to say it for the main project. But
the line was, I love you, and you said, I love you. Fuck.
I fucking love you. I absolutely love you. And I want to tell you every single day that I care about you.
Oh, William, this is so sudden. I didn't know.
See? There was that fuck added so much to it.
I mean, you know what they say about fucks.
Yes, they do.
I'm not going to turn that on right now.
No. But one last question I wanted to ask involving casting, directing, and all that sort of stuff is, when you when you're looking at everyone's parts and everything else and seeing about what all you need to make sure that the right part is found, do you ever have like that kind of like light bulb effect that happens where it's like, that's it?
It's sometimes like that. Sometimes I'm like, ooh, yes, this is the one I want. But honestly, I get so many light bulbs for each role where so many people could work. So many people are great choices that I basically have to go sort through and then think which light bulb is shining the brightest to me.
Mm.
Because there's often so many people who could do the role justice and do a great job at it. But because only one's there, I have to basically find a way to dim each bulb, which is a very sucky thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I pare it down to the one. And that's how I know that the one I got is truly the best I could get for that role.
And I'm guessing it's all pretty... The circumstances change depending on the characters and people
A lot of things that people neglect is speech patterns.
Mm.
Like, as important as a voice is to a character, how they're saying things is also important, because everyone has their own unique cadence, their own vocabulary, their own way of speaking. So those are factors to keep in mind, too, playing that into characters. And there's so many little things that can change in an audition. I've heard some people say, oh, that's bullshit, the little things. But I've heard a lot of those little things. So I know that these individual choices and these things that people do can really be what sends it over the edge. And sometimes it pans out. Sometimes it's like a miss completely.
Mm-hmm.
But at the very least, it's memorable. And you made that effort.
Yes.
To try something unique.
Oh, yes. And I definitely would like to get better at handling speech patterns, because I noticed that I have, with a lot of coaching that I've had over the last year or so, is where some of the ways I tend to speak and say things and such, like maybe there's some words that don't sound like they fully form out of my mouth.
Enunciations.
And how I feel a lot better about using other voices than my natural one.
Mm-hmm.
That's mainly my big hurdle. Because as I've told many people, I was the guy that grew up singing Pearl Jam songs like Eddie Vedder rather than as William. So that was sort of my whole thing that I need to overcome. And I'm getting a lot better at that. But I also have, as someone who grew up in West Tennessee, I don't have a Southern accent, but I do have Southern dialect. And some of my word pickings and choosings might sound a little odd, and my accent will probably just come out randomly rather than often like it would for the rest of my family.
Oh, you dumb bitch, it's gonna come out at some points.
Well, I can't really do that because that's just stupid.
Oh, how dare you, y'all gus tootin' and darn it, I say.
But that is one thing that's good about being in West Tennessee is being able to see all the ribs that you can eat and all the barbecue and cooking and all that good stuff.
Y'all.
Which that brings us to my cooking question. So,
that segue, though.
What got you started on cooking?
I've always liked, enjoyed to eat. Well, that's a
we all
thing.
Enjoy
I
eating.
I enjoy eating. Yes, that's my answer.
It keeps us alive.
No, it's like something, that's just a phrase I say, like, I haven't always, I just enjoy it. But I did enjoy helping out in the kitchen, and I wanted to try my hand at some things, because I'm a very particular person when it comes to the way I like things cooked. I often find, like, I don't like my bacon too floppy. I like my eggs to not have any white that is uncooked. I like my food to have a certain type of colorization to it. I don't know exactly when I started, but I always liked helped out in the kitchen and enjoyed helping out. I always lick the beaters afterwards. I still do that to this day. I will literally like take a beater, put it on a paper towel, and place it in the fridge and save it for later, because that just hits different, man.
Mm-hmm.
Just eating like the whipped cream or the cake batter off of the mixer itself, just, I don't know, there's something about it. I don't know how to describe it. But I grew up in a house, and my grandmother and my grandfather, they always were cooking. My grandfather's a master at the grill. Like, he's also a rancher. He owns a ranch. So he sometimes will just have a stack of ribeyes and grill each of us a steak.
Nice.
I know. And it's amazing. And he's a master of it. He's also the guy who said, never put a condiment on a steak. You're doing it disservice. I saw someone the other day saying, like, do you put ketchup on steak? And I said, if it's like a Salisbury or something. But if you have a good, high-quality piece of meat, you are doing it a disservice.
Yeah, I would not do that.
No, that is blasphemy. You should get tar and branded.
Yes, yes. How do you like your steaks usually cooked?
Medium, which, funnily enough, is to my grandfather's chagrin, because he's a devout medium-rare person.
I am too, though I'm not really picky usually.
See, I don't like it because I feel like I have to chew it too much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like having to chew too much, or when I cut into it with my knife, that it stretches.
Yeah.
It stretches. And what's some other things about it that way? Bloody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it being bloody. I like to know that the thing is dead that I'm eating.
Yes.
That being said, though, I would still like it to be pink in the center. I just don't want it to be red. If it's gray, like, that's just a depressing food color.
Mm.
I know Beauty and the Beast said, try the gray stuff. It's delicious.
Delicious.
But you don't want a gray steak.
No.
And unless I'm having tartare or something, which I have had tartare, it's really good. But I don't like the idea of a blue steak, a blue rare steak. That just feels like, unless you know where it came from, that's just a highway to salmonella poisoning.
Yeah.
I saw someone on Facebook post about their medium rare chicken strips.
Ooh.
They were hospitalized afterwards.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Like, also chicken breasts and having them be uncooked in the center, because it wasn't even medium rare, they were just uncooked. That's something I worry about whenever I'm, like, cooking a thick piece of chicken. I always have to end up butterflying it or something, just to make sure it's not going to be raw.
Oh, yeah. And I always make sure that if I have that worry, I just leave it in the oven for at least 8 minutes at 350 degrees.
And there's a sweet spot you have to hit with chicken, because if you go too soon, you're making it raw. If you go too fast, it's dry, especially if it's chicken breast. That's a piece of meat that can be very rewarding, but very tumultuous and very temperamental.
Oh, yeah.
If you overcook it, it's just going to be a dry, stringy mess. It's just, I also don't like boiled chicken.
I'm very thankful that the chicken parmesan I made not too long ago with my mom, that was just right.
Oh, yeah.
It was very delicious, very moist. It had wonderful flavor with the marinara, and I think next time I might do a more traditional frying for it. But we were doing it kind of like a pan searing, because that's what I saw in the recipe, and I just wanted to try that recipe out. And the only other difference was, my mom really wanted to add pesto to the marinara sauce, which I think is always a good thing.
That's a good decision, yeah.
Pesto with marinara or any red sauce is going to give it extra life and flavor. Mm-hmm. And then before I even put it in, I've seen some people prefer to add in like their last bit of basil and parsley after it's out of the oven, but I like to add it on top because once it comes out, it just looks like a painting. It looks beautiful.
It's beautiful. Don't burn the herbs. But yeah, that's actually one of the other reasons I got into cooking was because my mom, she has celiac.
Mm-hmm.
Which, for those of you who don't know, is you can't digest gluten. It's basically like your body attacks it if you eat it. And because of that, we often made gluten-free versions of a lot of meals, like a chicken parm or a chicken fried steak. What are some others? Oh, I would always make gluten-free birthday cakes.
Mm-hmm.
Like last year, no, it was this year. Her last birthday, I made a gluten-free and dairy-free carrot cake, and it was one of the best cakes ever. Like she loved that cake, which made me really happy because I wanted her to really enjoy it. And that was also one of the reasons I cooked a lot, was just as finding new ways to make things. Like I make banana bread so often. And what were some other things? It was just finding new versions of those recipes, and also wanted to try things out online. That made me want to just keep experimenting with cooking. I'm nowhere near, like, I wouldn't be a chef at this point, but I can hold my own.
Mm-hmm.
I can hold my own. I think it's important that everyone learn how to cook some things.
Oh, yes.
So you're not always doing takeout or you're doing, because a TV dinner, it just doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll take a TV dinner and put some of it, like, in a pot on the stove, or I'll give more of a sear to whatever inside of it. That's something I'll do, is I'll take pre-made meals and cook it my own way so that it gets the result that I want, or as close to, like, restaurant quality as I can.
There was a night where my mom had gotten some fried chicken over at Jack's, which is a new fast food place in the town I'm in, and I normally am not crazy about their chicken strips, but I didn't have anything available for dinner, so I just thought, okay, I'll just put what's left of these chicken strips in the microwave and just eat them just so I have something in my stomach. Mm. And I just hit reheat, let that go for 3 minutes and 15 seconds, as long as the usual reheat goes with that specific microwave. And I took them out and I thought, these are actually better than what they actually taste like when you get them fresh at the restaurant.
Interesting microwave. I would have thought you said air fryer.
No, it wasn't an air fryer, but I need to get an air fryer back because I used to have one and I want it back because I see so many good recipes with it.
We have one, but first one we used so much that it melted.
Oh, gosh.
And the second one we've also used so much that it didn't melt, but it short-circuited.
Oh, no.
So as you can tell, we get a lot of use out of our air fryer. Mm. It's definitely a worthy investment, though. Keep it clean. And do keep in mind how much you're using it each day, because, I mean, I didn't know that it could melt itself.
I didn't either till this conversation.
Well, there you go. Keep an eye out for that.
I also need to, hopefully pretty soon, I'll be making Kelsey and some other people some birria tacos soon. I get to have my first ever experience with an Instant Pot. I'm really excited about trying that out.
We have an Instant Pot. We used to use that a lot. I wasn't even the biggest fan of it because it would only result in, like, it's great if you want, like, shredded meat for things, but I like my meat to have a substance. I also find I like meat that's usually fattier because lean meats for, like, stews and things like that. I mean, I get that that's what their purpose is for, like, long braising and stuff, but it just was so chewy and dry and flavorless. I need my meats to have some fat in them.
Yes, and I like to make sure some fat's in there with mine, especially with the birrias. And what's nice is, especially about home cooking type stuff, is you can shred your meat however you want to. You can make some big chunks left in there, some tinier ones, just depending on however you want to do it, and then mixing it with all the chili sauce and the broth that gets mixed in with all the meats just cooking.
He's drooling right now. Please don't eat me.
I won't eat you.
Demon. Thank you for being. That's reassuring. Thank you.
I'm in Texas right now, so Demon Dorphy has not followed me all the way over here. She's been in the last couple of episodes.
What?
Yeah, there's a Demon Dorphy in this show, and yeah, she just made an appearance at one point, and she hasn't left.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's kind of like Jeff on Craig Ferguson. Just
who that is.
The creepy robot that he would have on the show.
I don't know who that is.
I'll have to show you the video afterwards.
Oh, dear.
But for all of you who know Jeff Peterson, thank you. very funny, very funny. He and Kristen Bell had quite a rivalry for a long time. It was very funny.
Interesting.
But I guess my other question for you is, since we've been talking about all these things we've been putting together, do you have a favorite recipe?
Oh, that... You can't ask someone that. It's like favorite child or favorite audition role or something like that. There's a lot of recipes, though. I'll just go down the list. Actually, I do have a favorite.
Ooh!
My Mimi has this recipe for cheesy, crunchy potato casserole.
Mm.
What it is you take potatoes and you cube them or shred them. If you're in a hurry, you can do instant hash browns because shredding all those individual potatoes will take a long time. Oops.
It didn't spill.
Yeah, it didn't. But it made noises. Damn phone. Anyway, so you do that. And you add in... I mean, if need be, I could share you the recipe and you can put this in the link somewhere.
Yes.
But, yeah, like, cream of chicken soup and ranch and sour cream and cheddar cheese, hand shredding. that one you can't skip. You do have to hand shred it because pre-shredded stuff has that coating on it.
Yeah.
And it's not really meant for baking dishes and stuff. And then you take those, and then you take cornflakes and toss those with butter so that they really crisp up in the oven. And you put that as a crunchy layer on top. And I put so much of that on there because that's like, that has the best texture contrast. And I put so much on that whenever I make that dish. And you put that in the oven until it's like bubbly and brown on top. And it got to the point that it was like too much work for my Mimi to do every family function. So I said, I'll do it. I got to have that on my plate because it will be like half my plate at any of those functions. And I made it once for my for Thanksgiving, and everyone loved it. This was from my dad's side of the family. Uh-huh. They never had that recipe before, but I made it for them. And it's like, Jakey, what's this recipe? We need it again. Which made me really happy I could do it justice, because I really wanted it to come out great.
Nice.
And probably could use more seasoning. I think there's the recipe... definitely add more seasoning because it's just too low on it. Seasoning is so important in any recipe.
Oh, yeah.
Mary.
I feel like if I were to ever have food at a party or a big get together, I would love to make, what I'm hoping to do sometime later this year is do what I will call a Cisco special. Now, for those of you who don't know Deep Space Nine, my favorite Star Trek series, Sisko is the commander/captain of Deep Space Nine, and he is also part of a long lineage of New Orleans chefs. So his dad was a cook, so he definitely got a lot of that knowledge of making wonderful Louisiana cuisine. And I wanted to learn how to make jambalaya and shrimp Creole thanks to that show. Ooh. And I made both. They were wonderful. And nice. I want to put the both of them together.
I remember there was a guy who posted a picture of his gumbo. And it was like rice with a couple pieces of shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was like, "What? I don't know what that is, but it sure as hell ain't gumbo."
No, you need like... You need like that chopped celery, the garlic. You need
all the vegetables. It needs to be like this beautiful dark brown color, not black because that's burnt.
Yep.
You need to add the right amount of the sausage and the shrimp. There's just so... Oh, okra. You need the okra.
I'd say that's debatable.
I trust the Cajuns on this. Unless, gotcha. Unless if there's a Cajun out there, let me know if I'm completely wrong about this. Because I highly respect y'all's traditions. Also, your voices are amazing. Mm-hmm. I love a Cajun accent.
I do too. That was not a Cajun accent. That was just me being deep.
And that's your attempt at a Cajun accent. Like, they don't sound like a frog. I would love to try that, but I also just think, like, recipes that have so many ingredients like that only have one purpose, I don't know if I could stock my fridge like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I do try to keep them relatively simple or with things that I just would use a lot in general.
I will say, if you're like me, where I'm afraid of messing up on roux for making gumbo, which I kind of did on my first try with gumbo. I think I cooked it a little too long, and I didn't stir it as much as I probably should have. You just have to keep stirring, keep going for a while, and something came up. I was like, I got to go take care of that real quick, and then I went back down, did this, and it was like... Okay. But with jambalaya, you don't have to have that problem and yet have everything else you would love with a gumbo.
Mm-hmm.
And that just makes jambalaya a lot easier for me. And shrimp Creole is easy too. You just got to make sure you have all your ingredients and plan ahead, and then you've got it. And I just love the idea of just mixing it together because the flavor of Creole and the flavor of jambalaya, just mixing that together would make even Sisko proud. So I would I would want to bind the galaxy together that way.
By the way, as a side note, this person is also named Sisko.
Oh, that works.
For those of you who can't see it, like nobody, you ever heard the Thong song?
Yes.
Well, the guy who sings that is also called Sisko.
That's funny.
So the whole time I was like, really? Mr. Thompson is a chef?
It is one of the more interesting characters in Star Trek for me.
Battlestar.
Well, there is Battlestar, but no, Deep Space Nine is Star Trek.
Oh, Deep Space Nine. Oh, well, I thought that was a separate thing. I don't know my Star Trek.
You're good. You're good. Like, if I were to ever tell people to watch
Star Wars.
If I were to tell people to watch one Star Trek show from start to finish in their lives, it would be that
Next
one.
Next Generation.
Well, Next Generation's really good, too. But its first couple of seasons are weird. And even Deep Space Nine started out kind of strange, but at least it had, like, there was at least one moment in most episodes of that season where it's like, that's actually a really good scene. I really like that interaction. So I'm at least happy I got to see that. And then Duet happened, which was like the 19th episode or 20th, depending on how Netflix handles it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I have to watch that episode a second time, which rarely ever happens for me. Where I will rarely go and watch an episode of television, and it was so good, I had to watch it again. Not only because you could watch it from a different mindset from, because you learn a big reveal in that episode about somebody, and now you can watch it back with the context of it, and it makes you appreciate the episode in a whole new light. And I would, if I were to just tell people, like, if you had to watch one episode of Star Trek in your life, it would either be that one or Sitting on the Edge of Forever from the original series. Those two are really good.
Duly noted. I don't know if I have a similar thing. I'll just say watch Avatar.
Avatar The Last Airbender is one of the best shows ever.
Yes,
for
honestly.
Sure. For sure.
Funnily enough, I got into that just because I heard the word airbender, and I'm enamored with aircraft and airplanes, aviation, all things like that. So I thought it was along those lines. It wasn't, but I'm really glad I saw it anyway.
I mean, Aang does have kind of a glider-looking thing. So
he does, yeah, and I did appreciate that. And then there was that episode with the Northern Air Temple where they were all flying around. That was cool. But it wasn't until, like, a Korra that they actually had planes in the universe.
Yes.
Which, there were some cool planes.
There were some cool planes.
I like the whole 20s aesthetic that they were going with.
I do, too.
And that they actually showed, like, yeah, it makes sense. They have all these things they do with their elements. Why not make them, like, a modernized city, in a way?
It was a very clever idea. Even though, like, there were some things that happened later on that I was not as enthusiastic about, personally.
That made me pissed off at Nick.
Yeah.
Especially for not allowing them to go more out with Kurosami.
Yeah, that was interesting. And I have yet to go back and rewatch the show, but I really would like to at some point just to see it from a more understanding context of how all of these shows get put together.
Yeah, animation in general is just an amazing medium. Because when you think about it, anytime you see a character move, that's another thing that was drawn.
Hmm.
So every frame is having to be hand-drawn, and that's just something that I think we forget about, and it's something we only notice if it screws up. We don't think about all that has to go in to make a shot look good unless it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really sucky, because we should have more appreciation for these things. Like, take, like, CGI in movies. If we don't even notice it's CGI, we don't think anything of it. We only think of it if it fucks up in some way.
Oh, yeah.
If it glitches, or if it looks uncanny.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they try to do a CG of a real human being.
Yeah.
Like Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
Which that was like, it was an earnest attempt, but it just felt so, which I guess kind of worked because the character himself is unnerving and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I could see that working. But I think that it's just this matter. Words are hard.
Yes, they are.
I'm a voice actor.
We can't speak.
No, we cannot. We also can't read.
No.
No, we can't. But it's just a shame that so much goes into these effects, and we only think about it if it looks bad or if it messes up. We don't think anything about how much had to go into it to look to the point that we don't even think about it.
I am glad to say that there are more things I'm starting to pick up on where, like, I can look at something aesthetically amazing and just, I will think it's CGI and then find out it's not. And that will really blow my mind. And I love seeing that in movies. But there have been movies like Wolf of Wall Street. I had no idea there were CGI for certain locations. And if no one had told me that there was no CGI in that harbor scene where they're just outside talking near where a boat is, I would have never known. I would have thought they actually shot on location, but nope. Mm-hmm. Those buildings in the distance, those trees, that sunlight, that's not real. How the hell is that not real? That looks real. And this was from 2013.
Yeah. That reminds me of movies like Chernobyl Diaries, where they basically had to make Chernobyl in CG. And it's these things that allows us to... Because there's no way they actually would film that movie in Chernobyl.
No.
But they filmed that movie in Prague and just added Chernobyl details to the background. And it does... It's amazing what you can do with a combination of, like, location and set. Like, have you ever heard of the movie Dread?
Are you talking about the Judge Dredd one?
No, the new Dredd.
Like, with Judge, Carl Urban?
Yeah.
Yes.
Not Sylvester Stallone.
Yes, yes. Which, I was hoping it was the... Well, he's still a Judge Dredd, but right, it's Carl Urban instead, and I fucking love that movie.
That one, yeah, that one's fantastic. There's so much uses of CG buildings in that, or the slow-mo scenes, a lot of CG enhancements. Which, funny enough, the sound that goes on in the background of those scenes is the Justin Bieber song You Smile slowed down to 8,000%. It's just a weird thing. Like, they just were happening to go through SoundCloud and someone did that. And they were like, this sounds weird. It completely completely different to the final result.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up making their own, though, so they wouldn't have to pay Bieber royalties.
Yes, yes. That is actually very clever to come up with ideas like that just from playing around.
Yeah, but with Dread, that whole building section, that was all CG. Well, there's no way they're going to make 200-story buildings like that just as a single set. But what they did was they took, like, one corner and one wall, and they just multiplied that for every story.
And they made it all look like it seemed like a natural environment when if you took those out, it would look like some place in... I think some of those exterior places were shot in Africa?
I have no idea.
I want to say so. I could be wrong. But I love that movie, and I've watched it multiple times. I even got into Judge Dredd comics thanks to that movie.
I hope that they eventually... that they do decide to make a sequel at some point. I think at the time, because 3D was being pushed on it, a lot of people were jaded by that at the time. And because people thought it was a remake or a sequel to the original movie, which it was not.
It is not.
I mean, Carl Urban never takes off his helmet, which is a shame because he's a handsome devil. But I am glad for Dredd that he didn't do that.
Yes, because Dredd never takes his helmet off, usually.
Yeah, but Sylvester Stallone always has to.
Because I am the star of the
This is a podcast about cooking.
This is a podcast about cooking, and
this is what happens when you have me on board.
Oh yes,
tangents.
It is all in good fun, and I'm sure Dredd would probably... It makes me wonder, does Dredd ever eat? Because I know
his face is like showing.
Face is showing, but it's like you never see him like sit out and eat at a restaurant. But I know from his genetic modifications, he usually sleeps for like 10 minutes a day. And the rest of the time he's out doing work. So it's like, do you ever eat? And I think that way with Jack Bauer, whenever I watch 24, never eat. There's only like maybe one scene. And I think it was like at the last episode of season 3, Jack Bauer actually had coffee. And I was like, that's the only time I've seen you drink anything that wasn't forced down your throat.
Interest. Oh, yeah, there's so much stuff in 24, which I have problems with that show and how it made so many people supportive of the idea of torture. But that is way too heavy a subject to get into for this. So
I'll just
leave that
My last statement for 24 was, growing up, it was my favorite show of all time. And then I rewatched it during the pandemic with my family. And most of it does not hold up.
Oh, it's funny how, like, I look back at some old American Idol auditions and the way that they spoke to the contestants. Like, they straight up said, like, you should just give up existing. You should just, like, in fact, you shouldn't even utter a breath because your breathing hurts my ears.
Oh, gosh.
It's like, they were brutal back then. And so glad, like, I know people are like, oh, that's too manufactured stuff. I much prefer it to telling people to just give up on life, essentially. More so was just give up on your dreams. But that's, like, I don't like it. I don't like that.
Mm-mm.
But then there's other shows like Sex and the City, which they're basically talking about how bisexual people are all in denial. That wasn't fun to hear. Or the L Word, which featured the first ever trans mass character on TV. And, well, the whole theme around him was that testosterone makes you aggressive. Which, not great. And there's literally a scene where Pam Grier says this, which made me really sad because I love Pam Grier. I'm sure she's just reading a script.
Yep.
But where she says, you'll be giving up the most important thing in the world. And Max, which is the character's name, he's like, what, my tits? And she's, and Pam says, no, being a woman. And it's like, shut the hell up. Like, that shows back then that, I don't know if it's because they tried or because they were just so mired in that casual transphobia or homophobia and stuff at the time. I'm just glad we're moving away from that.
Yeah.
And it sucks though how many shows just don't hold up.
No.
Like Friends.
I have never watched Friends.
Well, Friends has its funny moments and stuff still, but they had like whole episodes where they just dunked on men who cried or have emotions, which just promotes toxic masculinity and things like that. So that aspect of it doesn't age well. I think overall people just, I still find Friends funny. There's still things I find funny and I enjoy from it. I just think that the hate to it can be sometimes overwrought, but I also understand why people really don't like it. Or any of the shows from that time, honestly.
That's understandable. I think my only awkward, I wouldn't call it revisiting because I only just got into this series over the last 2 years. My favorite book series right now is the Dune series. I really love it.
But excited about the new movie?
I'm so, so, so excited.
It has Timothy Chalamet.
Yes. And my favorite.
And Zendaya, right?
And Zendaya. Yeah.
Yay, Zendaya.
And my favorite book in the series, God Emperor of Dune, has one chapter that I wish could be retconned because of how it kind of talks about, like, homosexuality is just a phase. Basically. It gets everything else in a very interesting and philosophical way of interesting and awesome, except for that one part. But that was, like, 1981 back then, so.
That's just.
Yeah.
Oh, God, there was an episode of Cheers.
Oh, no. Where, oh, no. The first sitcom I ever watched.
There's an episode of Cheers where a guy comes. I think it was the first episode where a guy comes in and is like, my son just told me he's gay. And he comes into a bar. He's all sad and depressed. And then someone says, well, just kick him out.
Oh, gosh.
Just casually, he's like, well, just kick him out. It's like,
no, help the guy.
No remorse in that? In like what? In the way you think of what you're saying? Like, what the hell? And scary that how casual it was.
Yeesh.
And thankfully the father is like, no, I'm not going to do that. He's my son and I love him. Which I'm glad that's what the result was.
Oh, but yeah.
The fact that like, because people would just be that casual about it at the time. And it still exists. Which I keep forgetting. This is about food.
I know. We're supposed to be talking about voice acting and food. But we have, I mean, it's important to mention these situations and circumstances, but also I think that if you can kind of see things from that, see where how things have changed and improved since then, I think it's a kind of a good way of showing that we are learning in a pop culture mindset of how we can improve and allow more acceptance and joy in these things. And
yeah,
same can go for food.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't think my mom would have cared to have enjoyed certain foods that I wanted to make because it was just stuff that wasn't around her at the time. And now she absolutely loves it. So just those things that we have to kind of keep in mind that will ultimately enhance the experiences of things that are similar to what we talk about in the show.
Having an open mind in general is just a great asset for life. And it's the best tool for growing as a person because the world around us is always going to be changing, always going to be advancing as like new generations come along and they get to the stages where they can start, where they can make a real difference in the world. And I think we've seen the most dramatic change over the past few decades in terms of not only of social movements and combining of cultures. and all those sorts of things. And I think it's really important to keep that up and acknowledge these things, to be like, hey, this is where we were from. Just imagine if we keep going, and we should always keep going. And we should always be trying new recipes in the kitchen.
Yes. Always try new recipes in the kitchen.
Try some macarons. Those are great.
Ooh, I should.
I've made those several times. They are an absolute bitch because they're very finicky.
Mm-hmm.
You have to basically get it to the right consistency. There's not really any other way to say it. I've heard some people say, like, oh, give it 50 turns or 50 folds. Which, have you ever seen Schitt's Creek? I hope you know what folding means.
I know what folding means, but I've only seen like 5 minutes of that show.
Well, there's an episode involving enchiladas, and the recipe says to fold in the cheese, which folding is just pushing the spatula underneath and folding that up to the top,
mm-hmm.
like kind of making a circular motion with your hand. But they don't know this, so they just hear folded, and it's like, what, like laundry? You just take the cheese and you toss it together like that? And it's like, if you say fold it in one more time, it says fold it in, David. Well, I don't know what that means, Moira. But yeah, you gotta fold it until it is the right consistency, which is like where you can make a figure eight lifting the spoon.
Mm.
And then you gotta spread that out right, tap it out on the bench, make sure there's no air bubbles, otherwise it cracks. And this is a step I neglected, but you gotta leave it on the bench for a bit to make it harden skin, so that way it raises.
Mm.
And I started doing that just because macarons are so expensive, and they don't need to be, because I can buy like a whole thing of almond flour, which is the main ingredient in macarons, and make God knows how many for the same price as six at a shop.
Yeah.
Which I understand why they are, because they are so finicky, especially due on a mass scale, but you can make them at home just fine. All it takes is a little bit of patience and a little bit of practice. Well, that's true for most things. You just need to keep practicing.
True, true. We finally went back to cooking. Yeah. I guess if I have any other final questions for you, is there anything coming out that you're really excited about that you're a part of?
Oh, yeah. Divine Speaker, especially. That's mm-hmm. stuff that's like I'm continuing to work on. And there's like updates and stuff that keep coming out about it. But that was my first ever role
mm-hmm.
that I got. And the fact that stuff is still... that's still in development, just growing so much, the team. Which, fun fact about that, ever since they got verified, they've been reached out to by people who are asking if they could cast the game. And it's like these big people who I won't name names, but it's like these other professional voice actors. And I'm like, hello, I'm over here.
Stand over here.
Yes, this is me. I'm already on the thing. Which is why you should always research before you look into projects like that.
Oh, yeah.
But there's that. There's also some other things coming out, which, not technically NDA, but I don't want to give them away just yet. But trust, when they're out, I'm going to be promoting the shit out of them whenever stuff starts getting leaked about them, because I want to share it with the world, because I'm so excited.
And if people want to see those updates when they are available, where can they follow you on the social medias and interwebs?
You can see all my YouTube and stuff. YouTube and stuff. You can see anything of mine under the Jacob Wilson VO banner. That's my Twitter, that's my YouTube, that's my Instagram, which I'm barely on, but it's there. Also my website, you can find that there. You can find anything of mine underneath at the Jacob Wilson VO banner.
There you go. And for any of you out there who want to follow me and see all updates involving the show,
you do, trust me.
Yes, yes, you do trust me. I have the voice that cooks on Instagram and voice that cooks on Twitter, and I really hope y'all look forward to all the stuff I'm gonna be putting out for the show. And hell, I think probably by the time this episode will air, we may be getting very close to the season one finale of One Shot's D&D Character Podcast. So if you're not caught up for that, y'all can be hearing the Averna Saga, where Odysseus is finally getting himself much closer to his nemesis, the Dark Unicorns.
To the Dragon King.
So I really hope y'all enjoy that, and look forward to all the stuff that I'll probably post coming out with other things and cooking things and all that. And this has been so fun, actually having an interview with someone in the same room.
I know, right? It's like so fetch.
It's so fetch. Oh my god.
I will keep making fetch happen.
We gotta make fetch happen, you guys. And if you guys want to keep making fetch happen, please follow this podcast on your favorite app. And please, please just leave a review if you're able to and let us know what you think of the show so far.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I do that a little too well. Alrighty then. Thank you all for listening to Voices That Cook. Hope you all have a good day, good night, whenever you're listening. And if you... I still don't have an outro yet. I will get an outro.
How dare!
I will have an outro slogan thing to say at the end at some point, dammit. It will happen. But anywho, bye guys. Love you.
Bye.